on the Midday 180.
Coach Mack previews the divisional matchups and discusses Arthur Smith's tour of interviews. Plus, Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist Torrey Holt is on the show. Midday 180 starts now.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us. We are ready to roll. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. The crew is all here. David Reed is the best at what he does. He's the chairman of the board. Urban Meyer to Jacksonville is the report that the deal is being finalized, which means signed. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Very curious to see Urban Meyer's staff.
How about my guy Urban Meyer, one of my all-time favorites?
I'm glad he's healthy.
Yeah. Is he going to give handshakes, or will he deny like he did me back at Opryland Hotel?
He's back close.
When he takes the job. Can't you see I'm talking here?
Back close to where he grew Aaron Hernandez.
Where he birthed him.
And, yeah.
Making a murder.
Obviously, it's going to be better there. It's hard for it not to be better. But Saban-esque desire for control of some things that you can't control in the NFL. You can't control guys when they go home from work. You can't control the mentality beyond a certain element. And I think in the end, while they will be better, I predict it won't be for him in the long run. And you know, 3 years from now, when he doesn't have the ultimate authority that he wants, and he's, you know, 8-8 or whatever, there'll be a health problem.
Well, so the heart issues will crop back up. If you're looking at personality of college to pro success or failure, Urban Meyer is definitely much more Nick Saban personality than Pete Carroll, right? If it's just a personality. One went back to the NFL, but successful. But Nick Saban went back to the NFL. He worked under Belichick also. Was not successful as a head coach. So will Urban Meyer be Nick Saban or Pete Carroll?
How many Pete Carrolls are there anymore?
I believe Urban Meyer will fail when I see it. I think this is going to be a big success in Jacksonville. I know you disagree, Paul.
And I'm rooting against it, clearly.
I think it's going to be a big – with the number one pick, with Trevor Lawrence – we all believe it's going to be Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. First off, they're only going to get better.
They have two number ones and two number twos in this draft.
They're loaded.
They have 11 total picks.
This is a complete revamp.
This is Urban Meyer's opportunity to take a collegiate approach and go and handpick your foundation like you can in recruiting. So he gets to start with that. I think it's
going
to be
success. James Robinson and Josh Allen on defense and C.J. Henderson at corner. And Laviska Shenault, DJ Chark.
There's some pieces.
Trevor Lawrence.
It's going to be a success. All those Titans fans that were telling me the season wasn't a failure and how just look at this team and look how the division is set up for them in the future. And I'm thinking, are we looking at the same division? The Colts don't even have – they don't care who their quarterback is and they're going to win 10 games at least the way the team is set up. Deshaun Watson's in this division. Now you've got Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence coming into this division.
Some of those fans seem to think that everybody stays the same.
that's more of a 2021. That's a 2021 statement looking at next year. Well, there's no reason to believe the Titans are going down next year. Oh, there's reason to believe.
Schefter now tweets out that there is no press conference planned as of now. So I think that's meaning it's not signed yet.
I'm just picturing, I've told this story before. Harvey Green, a famous PR guy who worked with the Yankees and then was with the Dolphins forever. You know, one of the most respected guys in the business. And Saban arrives and, you know, the PR guy's got, you know, 10 minutes with him in his office before the press conference. Harvey's got a list of things on a yellow steno pad, you know, some bullet point notes. Here are things that you're going to be asked about and a few thoughts on each of these things, coach. And he hands him across the desk, this yellow steno pad. And Nick takes it. Nick, I'm going to call him Nick. Yeah. I would not usually call him Nick. I'm doing it in honor.
You're one of the few people who are on a first name basis him,
I would
Coach
call
Saban.
Him, I would call him Saban, but because it's a bigger sin to call him Nick, I want to
call,
sin.
Call Bobby Knight Knight and see how that works out for you, if it did like the Indiana student that he choked.
Not to his face, but perhaps on air.
Hey, Knight.
He hands him this yellow steno pad across the desk, and Saban takes it and literally, like, his eyes just touch the front page, and he throws it on his desk and says, thanks. That's how much regard Nick Saban gave this. Yeah. So I'm just picturing, and my friend Tad Dickman, who's no longer with the Jaguars, he left them during the season, but I'm picturing now the chief of Jaguars PR in a similar moment with Urban in the next couple of days. And I'm calling him Urban just because it'll piss off the same guy who thinks you can't call Nick
Chad,
Nick.
Well, it's never going to get old, by the way, hearing the name Tad Dickman.
No,
it's not never going to get old. Every time you say his name, I'm going to have a reaction.
He's been very helpful to the show.
Chad, will you please retell the story of Urban Meyer refusing to shake your hand?
So I'm working for George Plaster's show at the time, right here on 104.5 The Zone in the afternoons.
Good afternoon, everybody.
We are at the coaches' convention at the Opryland Hotel, Gaylord Opryland Hotel. On this day, we have coaches like Mack Brown and I'm trying to think of other coaches. Jim Tressel was at Ohio State at the time. Nice as could be, just walking around, talking to other coaches. Agents are talking to them. We happen to be the only radio show broadcasting from Opryland Hotel. We're just right there, so we could just walk them from, you know, the garden atrium over to our area before they speak, and they go on for 15, 20 minutes. It was great. Well, Urban Meyer is positioned right in front of our broadcast spot, and I'm walking around trying to get these different coaches, just walking up, introducing myself, trying to get them to come on the show. I'm probably 24 at the time. This is right after the 2006 national title, I think, so I'm 24, 25. Walk right up to Urban Meyer. He is talking with a woman and what appears to be his lackey. Some dude who's carrying his briefcase. Okay? And I don't know who the woman is he's talking to, but I politely sit in the background and wait for them to finish their conversation.
Proper distance.
So I'm just sitting there, and you could tell kind of the woman's looking over at me like, all right, this guy's about to come say something. And
what's your distance in feet?
I'm probably a good 6-7 feet. I'm socially distanced. Before social distancing was a thing, I was socially distanced from Urban Meyer. So she's looking over at me thinking, what is this guy doing? And then she stops talking. I give it a good 5 seconds. I walk up to Urban Meyer. Hey, coach. And I extend my hand. I'm Chad Withrow with 104.5 The Zone. We're broadcast. As I'm saying we're broadcasting over here, he looks at my hand, doesn't shake. This all happens in a matter of seconds. Looks at my hand, doesn't shake it, and says, can't you see that I'm talking to someone here? And turns his back to me. And I said, oh, I apologize. So then I don't know what to do at that point. Does he want me to wait until he's done talking or just get the hell away from him?
I think it was a GTFO.
So I step back another 3 feet. He's not talking to her. There's complete silence. They all sort of rally around him like a SWAT team setting a tight perimeter around each other. And then I give it another 15, 20 seconds. Decide, I'm going to walk away. And I believe I told the story on air that day of what happened with Urban Meyer.
So in your
now that I think about it, I'm telling this story again and thinking about it out loud. Maybe he thought I was a coach. You know, they get hit up by young assistant coaches without a job all the time, and maybe they get tired of people trying to get a job from them, or you know, wanting to talk to them about something. Maybe that was it. But I did say I'm Chad Withrow with 104.5 The Zone. Can you see I'm talking to someone here? You can see I'm talking to someone here?
And then silence.
So in your awkward dealings...
So we did not get the Urban Meyer...
I love
Meyer.
That he looked down at the hand.
We did not get the Urban Meyer interview.
In your awkward dealings
the best
with...
was he glanced down. He goes from eye to hand, looks at my extended hand, does not offer his, and says, can't you see I'm talking to someone here?
All right, so in your awkward dealings trying to get interviews...
And I've had a lot of awkward
settings
dealings.
Like that, give us...
Sterling Sharp give us your was rankings. One of the worst.
Give us a top three or a top five.
Oh, man. Well, Urban is definitely in the top three. Sterling Sharp had won Super Bowl. I think Hutton was maybe with me at this point. I go up to him and I say, can you come on our show in Nashville? The hosts were back in. So we're lining up. It's a long story. We're lining up guests for hosts that aren't there. He looks at my credential. Like he kind of grabs it, sort of like the woman that Paul had the interaction with. Sort of grabs it and says, Nashville? no, I'm good, and laughs and walks away.
And I was like, okay, who's laughing now?
Sterling Sharp. That was one of the worst.
Aaron Andrews.
There's always, well, that wasn't trying to get an interview.
That was trying to get
I wasn't trying to get anything, believe it or not.
That's why it was so awkward. She's so
there's
used
a,
there's to
a popular opinion
to get
that
something.
I was trying to get something. I was not. I was not even addressing her. I didn't even look at her. I didn't
Which
speak to her.
She
was
it.
Not addressed. It was I was addressing the table. She happened to be on the end of the
she
table.
She doesn't like you speaking at the table.
No. Apparently, I didn't have the conch. I needed the conch to speak. The lesson there is do not speak to Fox Sports on-air and execs unless spoken to.
She's pretty big time. Not
Just
local.
Ask her.
Not local, but big time.
Just ask her.
I'm sure Hutton and I could come up with a list of other awkward exchanges on Radio Row when we're trying to get guests. Maybe the best exchange for Hutton and I was Will Forte, who's just in Adam Sandler's entourage, and no one's talking to him. He's got the full beard because he was doing Last
Sitting
Man
by
on
himself.
Earth. Sitting by himself, and Hutton and I are like, can you? He's like, sure. You know, it's like, we walk across the convention center together.
That's big.
He sits down for
we
20 minutes.
We walked a mile back to our table.
He was great, too. And Alan Covert, also. Remember that
guy?
Yeah,
from Grandma's Boy.
Look how far you've come. Now you're being offered Vincent Jackson.
I can talk about Grandma's Boy.
Now you're being offered Vincent Jackson and a wounded warrior.
Joe DeLavalier wants to come on with a wounded warrior.
Bob Golic can talk about Saved by the Bell with you.
You've come a long, long way, Chad. People are coming to you.
Chad,
now.
Can you please talk to this backup tight end for the Indianapolis Colts from 1991 to 1996?
Who's going
to
have a sponsor guest with him? Must be both.
Coming up, Coach Mack's going to join us. We're going to preview the divisional matchups this weekend. Urban Meyer reportedly finalizing a deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And this is a job that Arthur Smith interviewed for. We will discuss the merry-go-round that has been Arthur Smith on the interview trail this week and what that's like as a coach putting together plans. I asked Mac about this on the phone last night. He goes, I'll save the answer for the show. Do you have a separate plan based on the personnel you're interviewing for? And think about how much thought and effort goes into interviewing for seven of those in a matter of 3 days.
He's got to be exhausted.
And then some follow-ups. Plus and one of them was after the game on Sunday. Like, all of that prep.
Plus, he had no come down from the game. No chance to, like, grieve the season or any
of
that.
Right. Yeah. We'll discuss that with Mac straight ahead. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Coach Mac is with us on the Midday 180. We're delivered by Edley's Barbecue. He's presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947. To learn more, visit FBHP.com. Coach Mack, good morning.
Good morning. Can I please just start off? You know, I've got in right in on the tail end of the opening of this marvelous show here. And Chad Withrow's story about Urban Meyer, I mean, that goes right to the top of my list. I mean, Chad, now that he's going to be the head coach of the Jaguars, he might need a PR guy to take him through Radio Row. You need to apply for that.
It's the ultimate long con, Coach, is that when he's a failed Jacksonville Jaguars coach and he's down in his luck, that he will at one point extend a hand to me and I will say, can't you see that I'm talking to someone here? To Urban Meyer? Maybe 20 years from now, maybe 40, but at some point, I will pay him back. It's going to happen.
The total recall that you had and the details of that story were absolutely outstanding.
Do you have any – I feel like you're the type of personality that's probably – that's never happened to you. Do you have any moment where you tried to meet maybe a hero of yours or a coaching icon and they were less than receptive to you introducing yourself?
You know what? I can honestly say never, not really.
I knew it.
I've never ever and that's a pretty social setting too. You were at the NCAA convention, right?
Yeah, it was the coaches' convention. They were having all the speakers roll through the ballroom.
Yeah, it's an Opryland, and so I mean, it's not like you're not shaking a lot of people's hands at those things. You know, I mean, and it's not that hard if you are the one being approached to be courteous and say, you know what, not right now. Glad to meet you. Maybe I have some time. Maybe I don't, but not just look at your hand.
Well, and on the flip side, Mac Brown walked with me across the hotel. to do the interview. Like, Jim Tressel was like, oh, yeah, can you show me where? And I was having to walk. Dan Mullen. I walked him from his car all the way over. I mean, across the hotel while he was on my phone talking.
Well, that's my point. I mean, and it's not real hard to be a decent human being. And it wasn't like you were asking him for money.
Or a job.
Urban Meyer in that moment was right on brand is the way I would describe it. And Mac's right. I mean, the coaches' convention is a lot like the combine. That's the best time. It's the best time to chat with coaches because no one's on the hot seat this time of year. Everyone's in a great mood.
I've rooted for his failure ever since, and it's yet to happen. So maybe now that he's Jacksonville's coach, it'll finally happen. My rooting for his failure will finally pay off, and he will be a failure in Jacksonville. Fingers crossed, guys. Fingers crossed. This is my moment.
Your attention to detail and recall of that story was very impressive.
Let's stick with that.
Kirby-esque.
Let's stick with that for a minute, Mac. Certain guys like Nick Saban, who need to control absolutely everything, find in the NFL they can't control absolutely everything to the degree that they can in college. What are the challenges for Urban Meyer, who's controlled absolutely everything in his college jobs? What is he going to find that he can't control in the NFL that he might have to come to terms with?
Well, the first thing, Paul, is he's going to find out, those guys that come from those really good college jobs, and he's a very successful coach. Absolutely. Let's just put that out there to begin with. But, you know, on your squad, you may have, 10 or 12 eventual first round picks at the type of schools that he's been coaching at. And you get in the National Football League, you're lucky if you've got two or three, and everybody else has them too. So the ability to get players, number one, he's going to find out, is a lot different. The level of competition is a lot different. And then plus, depending on what concessions he got, clearly that's a big name, and they went to get him. I don't know whether he got $12 million a year or not, but the control part of it, I would assume that somebody that has the leverage that he supposedly does, Paul, would have got that ironed out before he got there. But it's a different world. The National Football League is a completely different world. I mean, it really is. Now, and I'm not saying he's not a good ball coach, because he is, but it's a different arena he's stepping into.
I brought up the personality similarities and differences. Urban Meyer, you definitely say, is more of a Nick Saban personality than a Pete Carroll personality, where it worked for Pete Carroll going from USC to the Seahawks and what he's able to accomplish there. Do you see that personality being a hindrance to Urban Meyer? And was the personality a hindrance to Nick Saban when he went to the NFL, where that works and correlates in college, but maybe it doesn't so much in the NFL when you're coaching professionals?
You know what I really think, Chad? I think it belongs to the individual and his ability to read his environment. I mean, that to me is the main thing, because you get into personalities. I don't know Urban Meyer. I mean, it's just I don't know him. All I know is what I have seen, and I know his record and those types of things. I mean, Nick Saban, I mean, I know Nick. I mean, I've talked with Nick, I mean, Nick talked to me about a job one time at Cleveland, when he was Belichick's coordinator. So I know Nick Saban. And to me, I mean, this is a lot like, and I know Pete Carroll. Now, I think Pete Carroll and Urban Meyer, just the little I know of Urban Meyer, I know Pete, they've got completely different personalities, completely different. But I don't think either or lends itself to being either successful or not successful. I think it's how you handle the environment once you get there.
Coach Mack with us on the Midday 180, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. If you need great health care coverage and an affordable price, let Farm Bureau Health Plans coach you through it. They've been protecting Tennesseans since 1947. I want to begin our Titans discussion. We're going to get to Arthur Smith in just a second. But a huge thank you and a shout out to the voice of the Titans, Mike Keith. He set up our travel all season, and he sent us a text this morning, Mac, that said he did some investigating about how many NFL teams did all of their radio broadcasts in person this year. In other words, how many teams did not broadcast even one game remotely? And the final answer is 2, New Orleans and Tennessee. That was it.
That's awesome.
And a huge credit to the voice of the Titans, Mike Keith, for handling a lot of the logistics. He was even our personal driver, Mac, on the road. And it was an outstanding season from that angle to be able to travel and cover the team the way that, that Titans Radio was able to do.
Hud, I agree with you, you know, so much. And we had questioned all year how many other, you know, radio teams were doing it. And the thing we found out, Hud, and you can address this too, is when we got to places, people were shocked that we were there. So we knew that we were clearly one of the few. I had no idea it was only the two of us, the only team in the AFC to do it. And it's major props. It's major props, you know, to Mike Keith. He put it all together. He handled travel. He handled itineraries. You know, he had flights. He had cars. He had hotel rooms for all of us, you know. And it's a big props, you know, to the Titans, too, you know, for, sure. for Amy Strunk and the organization, you know, for allowing us to do it and wanting us to do it because they knew what the product is. But you're right. Mike Keith was just outstanding. And, I mean, and you guys, before I joined up, you know, four seasons ago, you guys have set a standard for Titans Radio. And it was really cool. And there were a lot of things that we had to go through. I mean, it was different. I mean, you didn't get to go to one game because you could only have so many people in the box. I mean, and then, you know, there were a lot of things. And the things that Brad Willis and Philip Noel and Rhett Bryan and yourself go through to set it up before the games, all the different protocols to get in. I mean, there were a lot of hoops to jump through this year. And I was really proud to be a part of it. I really was. And there were, you know, I know a little bit about what Paul goes through now. Because, I mean, for 34 years, I've traveled on a team plane. And that's a lot different than traveling commercially. And so I know what Paul goes through just by himself going to a game. And there's a lot into it. And big ups to Mike Keith and all you guys on Titans Radio. Very cool.
If you gave me an over-under to set, Hutton, I would have gone a lot higher than two. I had no idea. Did you guys have any idea that it was that rare?
Well, like Mac was saying, like when we would get there, that we always set up the day before the game.
Yeah.
And there were some days where there's two of us showing up to set up, some days where there's three or more. But day before the game, you would have someone escort you up to your booth, which is not your normal booth this year. And every time there would be like, you guys were the first visiting radio to show up and set up anything.
So you got more and more of a sense of that. That's crazy.
And, you know, there are other teams that traveled some, but then there was a COVID issue with their crew, so they decided to stay back and do it remotely. Houston was one of those.
Traveled some, but not every game.
Titans Radio is at every game.
Are the only two that did every game.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what was interesting too, Hutt, and I know. I mean, we got off on this subject, but it's pretty pertinent. Were the different protocols that each stadium had?
Yes.
I mean, they were so entirely different, and teams got better as the season went on. That first time when we went to Denver, I mean, that could have been a sitcom. I mean, it really could have been. I mean, it was unbelievable what we started to go through there, you know, from trying to get that hologram on your phone without any Wi-Fi out there in the sun, everybody's sweating. No, listen. And then you finally get that and you get up there and then they're starting to do your temperature. And there were some NFL officials there too, because, you know, it was the second Monday night game, the first game of the season. So everybody's kind of new at it. And she sticks that thermometer on that NFL official's head and says, 107.5. Dude, you got an issue.
We got to Minnesota. We got to Minnesota. I'll tell the inside story here. We had the woman that was checking the temperatures was great. And we were the only crew there to set up that afternoon on that Saturday. And Phil had to go to the restroom. So we go through the line and our temperatures checked, everything. We get our wristbands. We have the equipment. We're about to go up and we say, hey, the next guy that comes through, he's even, you know, the temperature, check his temperature, please. But let him know that it's right above the threshold of being able to enter. And so Phil gets his temperature checked and she's like, I'm sorry, sir. It's
98.9.
No, it was like you're at 102.1 or something, you know. Because you could have like something below a 101 point something,
whatever.
Something. I don't know what the 100 point something. And he was like, really?
Threshold.
So Phil took off his hat and rubbed his hat like a genie lamp, his head like a genie's lamp. Like there was going to be some magical.
It's like Mr. Miyagi fixing. fixing Daniel's son.
I think that would make it warm.
He slaps his hands and he rubs his head. The fever's going to go away. It's some ancient Eastern remedy.
How long did she let this go?
She played it straight. We were in the corner laughing. Or, you know, we couldn't hold it. And sure enough, he saw us like, 60 seconds in, and they let him through.
The whole lady at Denver thing, once she said that to that guy, then they had to call a lady down from the offices because it wouldn't work. Nothing would work, and people were stacking up. And, in the sun, it was hot. There was a line going out in the parking lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she came down. She came down, and she starts engineering all of it. She says, well, look, just forget the hologram. Just take their temperature. So she takes Mike Keyes. 106.7. And so we just hit the ground. And then she's the lady in charge says, no, you can't say that. Well, the lady doing the temperature thought she said, say it louder. So she went, 106.
And he'd be dead if he had a temperature of 106.
Mike Keith was hanging out on the surface of the sun, apparently, before he got to the stadium that day.
Max,
was Denver the worst of all the ones to go through? Was that the most difficult protocol to follow?
With all due respect to Denver, it was the first game, of the season. When we got in there, I mean, there was, nobody would tell us where to go. We got on a freight elevator, Amy and I and Rhett, and got on the freight elevator. And, he said, where are you going? And we said, we're going to the broadcast booth. We're going to the press box. He said, okay. And so he just punches, and then it goes to a level, and he gets off. And we said, is this it? And he said, no. And just took off. Door shuts. Here we are.
Figure it out on your own.
We got lost in Lambeau, too, this year, trying to get up to our area.
Hutt and I were so lost in Lambeau.
Lambeau's a tough one. Yeah. That long catwalk to nowhere.
Oh, we went to a point as to where Hutt walked up the stairs to try to look, and I said, I'm going to stay here and hold this door open. Because if it's shut, we're locked in the stairway.
Here's the thing at Lambeau, too. You park here, you walk like halfway around the stadium to get in, and then once you get in, you walk a catwalk that takes you all the way back to where you parked, where there's a gate right there. So when you leave, you can walk straight out to your car. I mean, everybody's got their bizarre little twists and stuff.
Oh my God! I've got respect now for the people that have to fly commercial to go do games. I mean, it was every week.
Mac, let's go rapid fire here for the final 5 to 7 minutes. Arthur Smith has been having a rapid fire interview process since the postseason ended for the Titans. Take us through the process of what he's doing on Zoom and how much planning goes into each individual chat with the team. How meticulous do you go over the team's roster to fit what your interview and your plan will be? Because I would imagine if he's doing that for all seven teams, there is a ton of background work that goes on his side of things to prepare for these interviews with general managers and ownerships across the league.
Yeah, Hutt, I can't imagine doing seven of them. I interviewed for three of them, and it was so extensive. I mean, now it was a little bit different because I didn't do them consecutive, but I did them pretty close together. But the interviews that I was on, I mean, they were a day and a half to 2 day interviews, and the presentations that you have to make. I mean, you're meeting with general managers, you're meeting with owners, but you're also dealing with personnel people. And then the one I did in Chicago, you had to have a full blown press conference. I mean, we had a full-blown press conference in the auditorium with the Chicago press there. So they were all different to prepare for, but it was very extensive. I had a book, looked like a playbook with all different sections in it, starting all the way from the draft, all the way, delineating their personnel, what we needed. I had an idea of their salary cap. I had of all of those things, you would present it. And then you had to have I had a daily plan. Like, this is here is kind of my blueprint for, for, for OTAs. Here's my blueprint for training camp. Here's how many days we're going to be in pads. Here's how I'd like to travel. It was very, very extensive. And as I said, most of them were day and a half or 2 day interviews. I can't imagine doing it just like a Rolodex, like what he's doing. And each place is different because the personality of the owner's different. And the personality of the franchise is different. And then you have to know the roster that you're going into. I mean, if you don't know the roster that you're going into, I mean, I don't know how you could really talk about it intelligently as to what was going on, because clearly you're getting a job because things aren't going real well there. So it was a very extensive and grueling process. I mean, and just sitting and talking when you're trying to get a head job with the owner, when you're one-on-one, and he's wanting to know what you're going to do, you know, to help my franchise. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it. You just can't say, well, I'm going to coach them up. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So having seven of them, I really can't imagine. I know exactly what it takes to do it. And then you don't know whether you've done a good job or not when you're through. You really don't, because each one of them is so different. It was different for me, and I know it's different for Arthur.
How difficult to talk staff at this point in time, and Arthur's seen a lot of head coaches come through, so he knows a lot of guys who've passed through here, but his only other experience was in Washington briefly. That's something that kind of worked against Mike Munchak when it came to him assembling a staff.
Yes, it did.
He had not been around, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think Arthur's got a little bit wider net than what Munch did. And you're right, that hurt Munch, you know, a lot. And it's important because they will ask you, and they don't, you know, I had, everywhere that I went, I had a staff, you know, in mind. And when they ask, I would have a name or two or three. Because the thing about it is, there may be somebody you want, Paul, or there may be two or three deep that you want, that you can't get, you know, because of contract situations. Yeah. But you have an idea of what you want, and then they will ask, because clearly if they've got a quarterback that they want developed, well, they'll want to know. You know, when I was up there interviewing for the Bears, you know, they asked specifically, who is going to be your quarterback coach? Who's going to be your offensive coordinator? And I had Mike Martz lined up to do it, you know, and so I could bring out that name and say, here, who it is, and here we go. But that to me is vital. Now, it's not a determining factor, but when you start getting down to the details of it, they at least want to know that you have prepared. Mm-hmm. And everybody that's having these talks, they, you keep a list. If you think even you've got a sniff of a chance at some time in your career, you either do it mentally or you put it down in somewhere physically that you ever get a chance to talk about and accumulate a staff, you will have people in mind.
Limited time left with you, Max. I just want to preview one game from the divisional round.
All right, let's go.
And it's an underrated one that you say we should talk about. And it's Packers and Rams. You say it's a really good divisional game because it's number one scoring offense against number one scoring defense, and McVay against LaFleur.
Yeah, and the thing that's fascinating to me about this game is both of those offenses are exactly the same, but you've got two defenses that are going to approach them in entirely different ways. You've got a 3-4 front, you got a 4-3 front. It's going to be very interesting to see how both of these defenses and LaFleur's got he knows the Rams personnel. He knows what Aaron Donald can do. He knows what Michael Brockers can do. He knows, you know, what's going on. He knows they're going to match Ramsey to Devontae Adams. So that to me is a very fascinating game for this reason. You know, first of all, as you said, you've got the higher rankings on opposite sides of the ball, but also, you know, you've got Aaron Rodgers, you've got Aaron Rodgers against Jared Goff, who has been very, very up and down this year. And the two head coaches approach offenses in exactly the same way, but you've got two defenses that have entirely different approaches to it. That's going to be very fascinating to me to watch and to see the personnel groups that they both use, how they start to build their call sheet against, you know, because they know what gives those routes and those splits and those concepts problems. They know that. It's going to be very interesting to see how both of those things play out. And that's the first game, too. That's going to be very, very fascinating to watch.
Jalen Ramsey against Devontae Adams as well, because Ramsey throughout this season has been excellent.
He's the best.
I mean, just his numbers alone matched up against notable wide receivers. The best game that a receiver had against him was Amari Cooper in week one. 7 catches for 57 yards. Jalen Ramsey faced DK Metcalf 3 times, counting the playoffs. He allowed 4 catches for 50 yards all year against DK Metcalf when
It cost the Rams a lot to get him, but he was worth every bit of it. It cost them a number one draft pick. It cost them money, and it cost them reworking their cap. But it was worth it because that's a shutdown corner. That's a shutdown corner. And if you're ever fortunate enough to have a true guy that you can match and shut down the other guy's, you know, main threat, you got 10 other people to play defense with. I had that once in my career at Arizona with Aeneas Williams. It was a true shutdown corner that you could match up on Michael Irvin twice a year because we were in the NFC East end and then anybody else's star receiver. And you had 10 other people to work defense with. That's a huge advantage for a defensive signal caller.
Look to the folks at Farm Bureau Health Plans when you need someone who understands the X's and O's of healthcare coverage. They've been protecting Tennesseans since 1947. They're online at FBHP.com. Mac, thank you as always. Enjoy the weekend.
Guys, it's always a pleasure to be on with you, and I'm glad we got to talk about all the way from Chad Withrow to Urban Meyer to temperature checks at stadiums.
The pleasure's always on this side of the Zoom call, Coach Mac. Thanks,
Mac.
See you guys.
Coach Mac, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plan. 615-737-1045, our number. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Coming up, Torrey Holt will be on the show later this afternoon. Until then, wide open phones. 615-737-1045. Number, a lot to hit. Urban Meyer reportedly finalizing a deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars to become their new head coach. The rumor is Trent Baalke is going to be elevated to the full-time general manager. He's the interim there.
I'm trying to think. There was some kind of report about his connection also. How important a post is it? I mean, I'm not saying it's not a power post. That's for sure. Sounds like Atlanta is going to be Fontenot from the Saints. And Art's name is growing in Atlanta. So I wonder
he's getting a second interview there.
Yeah, I wonder if he knows Fontenot.
And a second interview in Detroit, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, he's not cooled off at all.
No. What's the best landing spot for him? What's the best fit?
I don't know. Before we get to that, though, here's something that's very interesting about this coaching cycle to me. Oftentimes, I mean, we saw this abused to the extreme with Wisenhunt, right? Wisenhunt's agent, I'm not remembering who it was, maybe Sexton, really played Tommy Smith. Like, oh, if you let him go, Detroit's going to grab him and you're going to really lose out. I don't know that Detroit was interested in him at all, right?
I think they were.
But they got
Jimmy Sexton's good at that.
They got Titans got played into giving Wisenhunt exactly what he wanted. In this cycle, but oftentimes a guy gets to town, just like with a free agent, right? And the agent will say, if you let him out of there, you're really at risk.
Well,
now, Saleh goes to New York. They love him in New York, apparently, but they let him leave, and he goes right down the road to Philadelphia. We have not seen the scenario where a team likes a guy so much they're scared to let him leave. And we've gotten to some physical interviews now where guys are going to cities. And we've not seen one guy not allowed to leave yet. This has been somewhat slow. Usually somebody loves somebody, they're scared of not getting him, and they go. And nobody's gone yet. Am I wrong?
It seems a little bit more cautious right now. It was Tommy Smith who panicked whenever the report got out that Detroit was sending their private jet to San Diego to pick up Wisenhunt, who was free to leave after they lost to the Denver Broncos that year. And Detroit had a plane in the air when Tommy Smith picked up the phone and called Sexton.
None of these candidates.
I think that the candidates, though, that would be the ones that an organization would be wanting to kidnap until they took the job,
right,
all have other interviews to get to, and they want to fulfill those interviews before doing it.
Right, but right? They're not so scared in the meantime of letting somebody that's impressed them get away.
Well, even if they were, I'm saying that if you're Arthur Smith, I appreciate the offer, but I'm going to go check out these other places because I've committed to interviewing with them. I mean, you can't force him to sign the contract there even if they really want him.
Right, but if you're Saleh, say, and you're in New York and you like it and it goes well and everything, and right, they say, we're not going to let you leave until we get you, then they put you at least at a point. Mm-hmm. And then the reports come out. He left despite their intentions to sign him or things like that. And we haven't heard any of that. It's all very much like, okay, it went well in New York and so-and-so's on to the next place. And all of these guys are going everywhere. I like it because all of these guys are getting the taste of every spot and every spot is getting the taste. And it enhances the chances that people land in the right spots and all of that. But this is not usually how it works. Usually how it works is one of these guys gets somewhere, they like him a lot, and they say, we can't let this guy get to the next spot or we're screwed.
And then right? There's also the comfort of knowing they're not going anywhere else. They're hanging up the Zoom chat, and they're alone in their office just like you're alone in yours discussing it with your team, you know, your front office.
Right. But some of these have started to be travel now. I don't know if Art's traveling or not at this point, but some of them are traveling. And when you start traveling,
then you don't leave.
Yeah, then there's a lot. You typically, but it hasn't happened so far.
615-737-1045. Our number, Chad, let's load up the lines and chat with some season ticket holders.
Let's do it. We've got a lot to get into. Postmortem, Titans-Ravens, Arthur Smith, the dilemma. The poll question we threw out yesterday, we'll update you on. Who is more difficult to replace, Dean Pease or Arthur Smith on defense and offense? A lot of different ways to look at that question. We can get into that as well. And Hutton and I will tell you why we, for whatever reason, could not turn away from Mississippi State and Texas A&M basketball last night. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. And it had nothing to do with gambling on the
nothing,
game also.
Nothing. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue.